this track in Redondo Beach lasted for a long time, so did the one in Los Angeles. And I didn't know, but they were ready to sign an agreement, but this way, and they don't want this, and it went to Washington and everything. But while we were at strike, we had lots of Cubans signed up. And to my big surprise, the day of the strike, only one came to the strike. The rest crossed the picket line.
Even though
they had signed, and they had gone to meetings, and we had a big majority and everything. And so I was very surprised, you know, because I didn't expect it. First, because they're all refugees. So I figured, well, they'll expect, you know, something out of the union. But I did know that Castro started with unions over there, and they all got scared because they said that's how Castro got in power. So, and I used to go and visit them. Then to make things worse, my last name was Castro. And that didn't help very much. So when the first day or second day of the strike, this one woman, her name was Raquel, but I forget her last name, she was on the picket line. The rest crossed the picket line. Then I knew of a woman. Her husband was a union man. He was in the telephone company, but he was a union man. His wife was a scab. They bring a car full of people. And I stopped one day, as he's coming in with the car, you know, I went and I stopped him by the car, you know, I said, look, I said, why, you're a union man? I said, why don't you make your wife stay? If she don't want to join the union, I said, let her stay at home and don't bring scabs in. And they had a little boy with them in the car. And the little boy says to me, don't talk to us, lady. We don't speak to communists. You know, and the man didn't say a word to me. And so they went in. So I went back to the girls and I told them. I said, you know, I said, the nerve, I said, he calls me a communist. So I said, now when he comes out, I said, we'll call him something. So when he comes out, I started in Spanish. And of course, everybody follows me. And I said, there comes the communist. I said, you sold out Cuba to the Russians. Now you came to the United States to sell the union to the employers. And you're a communist and a scab herder and all this business, you know. And this went on for quite a while. Every time he come by, but he didn't. He just smiled and went one time, and I heard that he had been talking that boy someday is going to get me. But I didn't know how he was going to get me. And I couldn't prove it anyway because talk about the Cubans. And this poor Raquel that was on strike, they used to, all the Cubans get together in the scabs and they used to go and throw eggs at her house. And her house would be splattered with eggs in front. And she had a daughter in a Catholic school and they made her life miserable because some of the other women had their children in the Catholic school and they accused that her mother was a communist, and which wasn't true. And I even had to go and see the priest about it. So anyway, one day he was coming out, had left his wife and another two women, I think. And when he's coming out, and I kept hollering, here comes this scab herder, go to Russia and things. And everybody would follow me, you know. And I didn't have to picket, but I couldn't stand in one place. And we had to picket two and two because it was restricted by this time. We couldn't have mobs, you know, so we had about six pickets. And there were six women going around with the signs. And I took the signs away from one of the women, and I started going around with them. And my feet were killing me. They hurt because, see, I always suffered with my feet. And as I was coming out, I stopped and I said, here comes the scab herder and the communist. And so everybody starts hollering at him. And he smiles. And he comes and directly, I'm standing by a telephone post. Then instead of making a turn like he's supposed to get out, he comes directly at me with the car. When I saw he was going to run me over, you know, I jumped. But I couldn't jump fast enough. So he hit me in the knee. And I you can see my scar yet. But he didn't do this. I mean, I had a scar from before. Mm-hmm. But it was just about a year old, and it was still kind of hurt. And he hit me in the knee, and hit me, well, not too where he would run me over, but I fell. And as I fell on top of another girl, and she had a picket sign, and she was pregnant. And the picket sign almost punctured her. Mm. And she stopped me from falling all the way, but I twisted my ankle. And I got sick, so anyway, they took me to the doctor.
Did he drive off?
Oh, he tried to drive off, but I got so mad at him when he did this to me. I didn't know why, and I had the keys of my car in the pocket of my coat. And when after I made a turn and got up, and the whole bunch of women bunched up and they wouldn't let him go. So he couldn't go away with the car. And I didn't know what to do. I had those keys and I just threw them at him, you know. And of course these keys scattered all over the street. And then when I saw the car stop, and there's a bunch of policemen, and one car is there, and another is here, and they all saw what was happening, you know, and they saw when he ran me over. And I hadn't touched him or anything, because you can say lots of things, but it's one thing to talk, and another one is to use force. So by this time, they stopped him, and I don't know, but some of them went, what they did it with, some of them I heard they did it with bottles, but somebody broke the lights on his car, and they... I went to, I don't know what it was, knife or keys or I don't know what it was, but just made a big line on his car. And all this, while they're doing this, I didn't care. I was so damn mad by this time. And then if the captain of the police was there, I would have still gone. And I ran over to him, and he had the window open on the car, and I grabbed him. And I grabbed him by the hair. And boy, I started slapping him. And I said, and you're not satisfied to be a scab herder, but you try to kill me. Well, then there's another girl that came, and she grabbed him, and she started, and somebody pulls me, and I see, I turn around, well, this happens fast, you know, and I see a black jacket, you know, leather jacket, so I thought it was the policeman. So first, when I saw the black jacket, I immediately let go, you know. I'm not supposed to be in fights anyway, working for the union, because in danger that they would sue the union later. This we were told before, you know. So I turn around, and he's one of the organizers, the man organizer. His name was Fred. And I said, well, you damn fool. I said, I thought it was a policeman. I said, why didn't you leave me alone? I said, I could smack him to my heart's content. But I said, do you see what he did to me? He says, but we're not supposed to fight you. I said, we're not supposed to fight, but we're not supposed to let them kill us either. So anyway, I brought charges against him, but somehow they let him go because the whole bunch of them had ganged up on him, and he left. And then I sued him because, do you know, and I'm going to die, but this is the truth, but I suffer with, I have a toe that got twisted, you know, in my foot, and I was under a doctor's care for almost for about a year, and it didn't help. It's just a nerve that got out of place or something. I can't wear shoes, like patent leather shoes. I can't wear them because my foot starts burning on that particular place. And I went to a compensation doctor and everything, and they couldn't find what was wrong with it. And finally, I sued him, but I was sick. You know, this is when after I got my heart attack. And it was almost a year. And no, before I got sick. And Feinberg was the lawyer for the union. So he had my case, so he did almost a year, and they never called me. I had taken my witnesses to him, and they told him the story and everything, and this other woman almost lost her baby. And so I said, finally, I said, what happened to my case? And he said, what? He said, are you still going to follow it up? I said, well, what do you think? I said, did you get hurt or I? And he said, well, he says, I thought it was happened. I said, well, that's what you thought. I said, but I said, so forget about it. So I went to see another lawyer. And this other lawyer, I went, in the meantime, I got a heart attack, and of course I got very sick. So when the case came to court, I couldn't go because I was too sick, and the lawyer talked to me, and he said, Mrs. Castro, you may win the case. He says, but it's going to harm your heart because I was very sick. So he says, can you settle the case some other way? And you know how lawyers work. So to the very last day, he says, Mrs. Castro is ready to come. And he said, they didn't know Mrs. Castro is flat on her back. So she went, and I told him, I said, I don't care if I get $1, but I want the satisfaction that that man is, you know, for what he did. So he got me $500 for the man hitting me, and they took his license away for a year. And what else did they lost his insurance or something. Mm. But that's all that happened. And then they had other cases. Oh, it was, when the strike was over and we sent the people back to work, and that was heartbreaking because we didn't have an agreement yet. And that poor Cuban woman that I'm telling you about, they beat her so bad, her own Cubans, inside of the shop.
Oh, but I thought the rest of them were scabs too, weren't they?
No, the others were scabs, but see, when the strike was over, then those that were on strike, they went back to work. But see, the scabs, they never left the shop, they stayed there. So when the strikers came into work, then the scabs beat up on the strikers inside of the shop, and we couldn't help them. And we didn't know, we never in our lives expected that they would do such a thing. And some of our women got really badly hurt. One of them got caught in a bathroom, and they beat her so bad that she got sick, and she never went back to work. She had a heart condition also. She got money through compensation, and this Raquel finally got, I don't know where she got, $5,000 or $3,000, because they, and the boss was watching while they were beating her up in the shop.
No, there was no way to place them in other shops rather than having them go back in?
No, because in Redondo Beach there was no other shops, and then we were negotiating.
Mm.
The idea was to negotiate after they go back to work and see if we can get the others. And we kept meetings, God knows, for months and months after they went back to work. We met with the people, and we get an offer. We give a counter offer, but the vice president of the union refused to sign the agreement as a preferential shop. And I couldn't see it. I kept telling them, I wish we'd get any kind of an agreement. Just get an agreement. We didn't get an agreement, and we lost the shop.
Now, in other words, the Cuban community, for the most part, was solidly anti-union. This one woman was one of the few.
But you know, the funniest thing is that the majority of them that worked in the shop had signed cards, you know, that they wanted a union. But at the last minute, they backed out. And then they had a poor lady, was an Italian woman, and I think she had an awful lot to do with it. I don't know what she told them. Anyway, there's always, you know, people going and telling what's happening. And the last I heard was that this poor lady either got fired or something, or was going to be fired, and she wanted the union herself, you know, to get even with the boss, but I wasn't there anymore, so I know the shop is not union. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the worst strikes that I've been to, because, there was beatings. People got beat up, both sides. I mean, a striker couldn't even be alone on the street, or they would gang up. We had a young fellow that they almost killed him one morning, and he was the type that would even lift his finger to fight, because he was very religious.
Mm-hmm.
And you should have seen the beating they gave him. And the girls, one of them got all, after they went into the shop, after we sent them back, they got scratched. One of them had a scar across her face. Well, there was about 8 or 10 girls that got an awful beating.
Mm.
And every one of those girls won the case, you know, against the scabs and against the employer. And we still didn't get the shop. And that's the one shop that I always felt bad about, you know. And
so that had gone on for something like almost 40 years, in other words.
Yeah, but off and on, because we left them alone for a few years, and then we started again. And I told them, when the day we won the election, you should have seen me. I just came out like a rooster. I was so happy, and the people were all waiting, you know. Because once we had an election, we lost, and one of the scabs said to the boss, he brings out a bottle of champagne. He says, now we're all going to get drunk because we don't want this union. So we lost it. But then the last time when we won the election, then I went outside. Of course, I didn't have no bottle of champagne, but I just went outside and I started clapping my hands, and I said, girls, we won. And you should have seen those girls. I'm telling you, they were all over me, and you think I was the... Because, see, I was the one that kept on and on. Of course, the whole union helped. I don't think that I did it on my own. But I wanted that job so bad, and we met, and I worked. And see, in Redondo Beach, I live here in Monterey Park, and I have to go there every morning at 6 o'clock. And sometimes I'd be out at 11 o'clock at night. I'd be still visiting people at their home.
Mm.
And I wasn't even afraid. Today I wouldn't do it because I'm scared to be out in the dark.
So in other words, even though those Cubans changed their mind, you still won.
We had a majority of people that voted for the union, and we had a big majority.
What, do you recall how many people were in the shop?
Oh, there was over 300 people, 380 or something like that.
Oh, so it's a really big shop.
And the shop in Los Angeles had 140 people, 160, I forget. And we also had a big majority in Los Angeles.
Mm.
But I didn't work too much in Los Angeles because I was working in Redondo Beach. Mm-hmm. And
Anita, were there any other shops like that? That there was a long thing like with this chic lingerie that started in the 30s and took all the way into 70 to...
The 20th century, they never bothered again. The 20th century was a real bad one, too. That was a bad one. That was a short.
Mm.
And I think we tried once more and we didn't get anywhere, so we dropped it.
Okay, usually if you didn't get someone with the shop, you'd leave it go over the years, you wouldn't.
Yeah, well, in some cases we did. I mean, like for instance, there's a shop, well, you heard of it, it's no longer in Woodya, Catalina.
Mm-hmm.
We tried Catalina so many times. And we think we have the shop, we have the majority and everything, we have the election, and they would come out, the bosses, boy, they really were smarter than we were. Because no matter what we did, they outsmarted us. And the worst part that happened, of course, we couldn't prove this, but we know it. So one of the committee, of the girls that was in the committee helping us, was one of the traitors. I mean, she would go and tell the boss. And then later on, I heard she got $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that we could never prove.
Mm-hmm.
We know because she bought a house and everything, but we just can't do anything about it. So Carolina used to put big signs inside of the factory. Just before the election, which is supposed to be against the law, but they do it anyway. It's just like they say it's against the law to go against the signals, and you do it sometimes anyway. So they put signs, big, fat, the business agent or organizer with the big cigars, you know, and they're squashing the workers, or they'll have another picture where the organizer is trying to make love to the girls, or they have a big picture with, they have a Cadillac. You know, and things like that. So, of course, people, I guess, they're all confused. And then the poor ladies would say, well, if the union wins, we're going to close the shop. And, and this is what scares people the most. And another thing that they keep harping, and this is the most unfair, I think, but the one that they understand the least, is when they keep telling you the union, the only thing they want is their dues and their initiation fee. And we didn't charge initiation fee to get a shop into the union. They went in free. But the dues started when the shop signed up the agreement. But the bosses would tell them you pay $100 initiation fee, or if you don't pay your dues, they throw you out.
Mm-hmm.
And that became, by the way, against the law. You know, once upon a time, they were kind of overdoing it, but came a time where you couldn't force people to pay fines or things. But you couldn't explain it. They believed the bosses and... At the last minute, we had a big majority of people. When we had the election, we'd lose. And that used to be bad because, you know, the union spends an awful lot of money when they're organizing.
Now, were there times when, like with the Cubans, where there'd be a group of people tied to a community like that who would be anti-union?
I don't think so. I think it just happened, you know, a bunch of Cubans came, you know, when they all ran away from Cuba. And you know how it is, one gets a job in one place, so the others all follow. Maybe they never worked in a factory before. So it's a little community, accidentally, I don't think it's done on purpose. But then, of course, maybe one of the reasons I feel so bad because my name was Castro. because I've been told, you know, that maybe I am related to Castro, and that's how Castro got the communists in Cuba, because through the unions. And it could be. And I never said it to them, but we used to joke about it. But it kind of bothered me. I thought Albert, maybe my name had been something else.
You'd be able to get them.
Or at least they wouldn't have felt so bad that, you know, that they didn't want the union.
Well, during the time when most of the workers were still Spanish-speaking, and probably most of them were pretty tied to the church and their community, what role would the priest play?
Well,
did they help you out?
At the end, yes, when we first started, that was way back. The priest, now I also didn't hear, but I was told by other Mexican people and Spanish people, and I wasn't even going to church very much. I was, you know, when you're young, you're not so, anyway, I was too busy to go to church. That's an awful thing too. So anyway, but they said that the priest would save the union, you know, they should listen to their bosses, and I remember the union sent a committee to see the cardinal about it, and they denied it. But later on, we had priests help us. We even had priests go and visit people. We even had priests talk to the people in meetings.
When was this?
This was in the last years.
More the 60s?
Yeah, the 60s and the 70s. Mm-hmm. They were entirely different. You know, they say they have a right if they want to organize and shouldn't mm-hmm. be stopped.
But earlier, when you were an organizer, would you go try and talk to the priest yourself?
No, I never did. But others did. I mean, and I actually didn't have any personal confrontation with anybody that said, well, the priest told me this.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that the committee went to see them because the priest had said something against the union.
Mm-hmm.
Some priest, I don't know who it was. Well, there was a, you remember, this has nothing to do with the union, but you remember when Helen Hayden Douglas was
mm-hmm.
running?
Mm-hmm.
And this I heard. I went to church and I heard the priest saying that he didn't come right out, you know how they do it, very subtly, but implying that she was a communist because she had been to Russia and they should vote for Nixon. See, and Nixon won, and what happened? Then when he went to Russia, nobody said that he was a communist.
Because, I mean, I would assume that among most of the workers that you were organizing, the church was a pretty powerful force in their lives.
Yeah, but they later on, it didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had more trouble, I think it's the Seventh-day Adventist, or some kind of religion, but it isn't that the priest or the pastor, or whatever you call him, says anything. I guess the religion doesn't permit that they pay dues.
Oh.
See? And so we had an awful time to convince.
Did you have a lot of them?
Not too many. Mm-hmm. No, but even if you have one, it's bad enough because that one, the other is here and then spoil it. But we tell them, well, you don't have to pay. We asked, I don't know where the idea came from, but somebody came with the idea, maybe New York told us to do it, to accept them. And they didn't have to pay dues. They will have to pay dues, but not to the union, but send the union the money to their church. See? So sometimes find that.
How about when we're an organizer still, this is before you were a business agent, even afterwards when you were a business agent, did you work with other community groups to try and help, like to support a strike or to talk to their people, like the Y?
I did, but not too much.
Mm-hmm.
Others did that. See, I didn't go to too many other communities or organizations. One of the reasons is I was too busy myself, and I didn't have time. I mean, my time was entirely taken up. I didn't even have Sundays off sometimes. But I did go to like the NAACP or what, you know, the Negro Association, National Association mm-hmm. for Colored People. I went. They also helped us. And I went to a couple of their meetings, but that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Others did, like either Emilio or somebody else from the union.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't.
But you spent most of your time directly with the, mm-hmm. the workers rather than
yeah.
the union.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the workers themselves, did you use other issues? Like, did they come to you with other kinds of problems rather than just...
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I mean, when you're working for a union... I don't know if I mentioned this, it's like being a social worker. They come out with all kinds of complaints, but mostly I had those after I became a business agent.
Mm.
Of course, as an organizer, I hear about too. They'd come out with the craziest thing and they expect you to give advice or tell them what to do. And I have my own troubles, but I forget my troubles. I was always giving somebody some advice. Like a woman would come around and her boyfriend is going with somebody else, and what should she do? Or a married woman, should she leave her husband? And I wouldn't know what to do, so I'd say, well, gee, maybe you should go see a priest or somebody else. I never told them it's none of my business. They used to call me the crying towel because everybody came to cry on my shoulders. And of course, I must have been the type that I listened to everybody, so I was kept off of business.
Mm-hmm.
With my work and somebody, because I was always helping the other business agents too. I think that I was the only Spanish-speaking business agent, this was later, and the others didn't speak Spanish. So every time they had a problem, like they had a shop meeting, I would have to go over and help them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know, but I went,
mm-hmm.
because I helped. And one of the reasons I guess I was so busy.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you first started and you were when you were working in the shop and in the office, what... Were you doing other things in the office? Like, did you set up education programs or recreation?
I didn't do... we had all this, but I didn't set them up.
Mm.
We had an educational director. We had the CDIO, which was first. You heard him. You know him. And then later on was Arlene Hernandez. She was the educational director. Before CD, I don't know where CD was at the time, we had Evelyn Monroe.
Oh, uh-huh.
Evelyn Monroe, but she also was an educational director, and we had a newspaper, and she kind of helped me quite a bit too, because, I was green. I just learned it here and there, you know. I didn't go to school for these things.
But your involvement was almost always directly with the women in the shop.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much setting up recreation or education.
No, I didn't do that. I went to, sometimes I had to teach, like there was a class I had to, somebody else in shop, so I had to do it. But I didn't like it. If I could skip it, I would. I did quite a bit, most of it is translating.
Mm.
I translated all the time. And that took quite a bit of my time, too.
So your preference, really, was to work more directly with the women.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned before that with the Mexican women who were married were much harder to reach because they would have to rush off after.
They have to go home and cook for their husbands, and the Mexican husband, you know, he wants his food on time and all that, so it was harder. I had to go to their homes and convince the husband and this would, you know, take time. Mostly where we got along better or got more out of it was women that had no husband.
Mm-hmm.
And we were always looking out for women that, single women or somebody that, because we, from the very beginning, I remember Harry Scott was one of the original organizers too, and he always used to, always looking out for some intelligent people that we can teach them how to be organizers, because when we go, we need some new ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I always preached that. And every time we went, when I had a shop meeting, I was always on the lookout to see if I find somebody that I thought would be really good so they could learn. I don't think they're doing now. Now, I shouldn't be saying because I don't work anymore. But from what I hear, before you could not work in the union unless you were a garment worker and you had joined the union and had a union book. And no matter how long you work in a shop, you have to work in a shop first. Now, they hire them, some of them from college, some of them from the street, some of them they never even heard of a union before. And I don't know how they're doing it, but...
No, I understand it's through several unions, but they don't
have
shop people.
Yeah, and you know, I still think I still think it's very unfair. Because, see, the people from the shops, they already have some experience. The others, even if they went to college,
mm-hmm.
college don't help sometimes. You have to see how it's done and what they do in the shops. So the college didn't teach you if they're how they're mistreating the workers or how they're cheating and things like that. So the only thing that maybe they teach them to know people, but maybe that's natural. Like, for instance, I didn't have any lessons in any of this, and I go to people's houses and first I'd look around and see what kind, if they receive me very friendly, of course that's fine, we started business right then and there. But I would go sometimes and I could see that the husband or the wife were not in favor of it. And I wonder, what did I talk about, you know, like one time I went to a house and the woman, she didn't want to know anything about the union. And she happened to have a picture of her daughter and, oh, what a beautiful girl. I said, gee, who is she? And she says, my daughter, you know. And she doubles her neck. Oh, how pretty, you know. And you know something? The woman signed up for one dog. And different things like that. I mean, I can't explain it. I don't remember. But you have to watch for the opportunity. Now also, you used to go two people to talk to the workers. Mm. And if you find more than one person, it's harder. I learned on my own, and then everybody else, I think they even had it in books, but I didn't see it. You have to like be watching the other person so they cannot signal to each other. Because see, one woman, maybe she's ready to sign and the husband would go with his head no, and that was it.
Mm.
But if the other organizer is looking at the husband, then he can't do anything like
that. So who did you use to go with his partner?
Oh, men, women, didn't matter. I went with everybody. Men, Jews, Negroes, Spanish, very seldom with Spanish speaking, because there was no need of having two Spanish speaking people. But one should be, and I didn't care if it was a man or a woman. And the same thing the other.
Would it be someone from the shop or someone from your
Most of them, when we had an organization drive, we'd get people from the shops.
Oh, so you would take someone from the shop? From the shop. Union was pro-union.
Yeah. But of course, if they're in a union shop and they know, usually people from the executive board, they knew a little bit more about the union than the others. And sometimes we had some real good girls that were not even on the executive board, and they became active. And
oh, so it'd be someone who would be active in the logo itself. And I see.
Yeah.
Now, but with the Mexican women who were married, you had to really convince their husbands, in other words.
Most of the time. And when they did join the union, they were good members and all that, but they didn't come to meetings, or they didn't, sometimes we have a picket line that is in shop, and all at once we call the shop, come out and help us picket. Well, we had a harder time because they had to go, or they couldn't leave in the morning because of their children and something. But I don't know, maybe if we had gotten a Spanish local years ago, maybe they would have gotten more Mexicans and more Spanish speaking. I don't know. But then it seems that during the war they kind of slackened a little bit and they satisfied with what we had.
Oh, that was the other thing. Well, I wanted to talk more about when you were visiting, but since you brought up the war, during the war, was there any change in, for instance, since a lot of the men were gone, did it mean that more women came into leadership in the union during the war?
I don't think we even got very, we seem to have, at least here, but I don't think we got any more than we had before. It was just kind of a standstill, shall I say.
Well, and how did the war affect your organizing drive? Because there were a lot of strike presidents.
Yeah, we didn't organize too much during the war. We did some, like, for instance, if we heard the, for instance, one shop in Ventura, and that was during the war, and I was working, I was a business agent then, but I also did, and I always, for some reason, I always preferred to be an organizer, see, so whenever it was something to do, I did it, and the others wouldn't, some of them wouldn't, they say, I'm a business agent, that's all I'm going to do, or I'm an organizer, and I didn't care what it was, same thing to me, as long as they told me to go ahead and do it. I went to Ventura. We organized a shop because they were making garments, and then all at once they started making parachutes. And we never organized the shop, and to this day I don't know why, because we had most of the people. Now, I don't remember whether either some other union took it or we couldn't organize it because they were making parachutes. I don't know. Because they
but
took
it was
me off.
The same women who were working.
Yeah.
On the garments. Well, did that happen very often? That as the war industry shifted over to that as compared to clothing that you then couldn't organize?
I think we could have organized if we had tried. It seems to me that we just didn't try hard enough. But I can't say it, you know, because I'm not sure.
Yeah.
The only thing I know that when Roosevelt was president, we organized a lot, and he was president so long that we could have organized everybody, but somebody went to sleep someplace.
Now, Anita, during the days when you were an organizer, too, were you friendlier with the people in the office of the union or with the people in the shops? Who were most of your friends?
I was friendly with everybody.
But when you would go out socially,
I went usually from the office. I mean, we were kind of all pretty friendly and kind of like a big family. And later years, things started changing. I mean, everybody started getting so funny and maybe not funny. Maybe I was the one who was funny. I don't know. But
in what way?
Well, they kind of kept to themselves and they didn't. We didn't have change. See, I think the management has something to do with it, because years ago we used to go out to dinners and parties. Then we get a new manager, he didn't believe in those things, and so it stopped. Now, for instance, now they have one, and he's, to me, something like Levy. I'm also crazy about this man. His name is Cornelius Wall. He's the vice president here in Los Angeles. Now, I'm crazy about that man, and seems that everybody else hates him. And to me, I think he's good, but he must have done something to others that they didn't like, and they don't think he's any good. And he doesn't believe in partying, like if somebody, for instance, retires, we give him a farewell party, give him a gift, and when he first came, he stopped that immediately. You're getting paid, and if anybody wants to do it on their own, that's a different story, but he wasn't going to have the union do it. The only time he did anything that I know of himself is when all the vice presidents and the new president came, then of course they had a big banquet. But
was it that people in the earlier days were more dedicated to the union?
I think so. Oh, yes. Yes.
Because, like in your case, it was one of the major purposes of your life.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that things have, well, I don't know how to explain it, but see, people are so poor, and then when you get a little better, and you know that the union helped you. But now it seems that everybody, like even the non-union shops, they have to raise wages. The union, I still say that the union has helped a lot, because even the non-union shops are paying better now, because that's the only way they could keep their people up. So indirectly, we help them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they would be still working, I don't know.
Okay, now let's go to when you were a business agent. Is there anything else about when you were just the organizer before you became a business agent?
I don't know. You know, I could spend months talking about things like that, but I can't get down. I mean, things that I remember, you know. See, they all, I don't remember dates, or I remember what happened, but then I have to put them together. Like, for instance, this radio business, I had forgotten all about it, and it was one of the important things.
Because you'd mentioned about the radio program and about the coffee that I was very confused about, and that was one of the things I had a lot of questions about, so now it's all clear. Okay, now, let me make sure about the formation of 266. There was a general strike in 41, and Roosevelt came back for that, and Jimmy Matrix was also here for that.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And you were working
with all of them.
With all.
Yeah.
And did they, were you working on your own, or they would assign you tasks?
Oh, they assigned me to do this and do that. And those days I didn't drive, and I had to taxi all day long from 3rd Street down to 24th Street or someplace, and running around, you know, doing what they told me what to do.
Now, were you doing it the same way that you always organized? Were you going into the shop?
Well, in some shops, you can't. I mean, if it's an open shop, you cannot go into the shop unless you go in as a worker, because they won't let you in. And if you go in with some kind of a trick, they might catch you, and it's, you know, it's like trespassing, so you have to talk to people outside. But the union shops, of course, is a different story. I mean, I had the right to go in and anytime I wanted.
Now, so during the organizing drive, were you working in the open shops at all?
No, I didn't work inside of the shops. I worked, I'd be here today, tomorrow they send me somewhere, they put me in charge of another group, and this way I never kept track of it, but I know that I kept busy.
Now, so you were working with the sportswear people and the dresses?
Yeah,
And then when
they separated, they made a new local. They called it the Joint Council. Now they had, by this time they had three, which also I thought, and I still think it was crazy, because they divided us in three when we could have been one. The clockmakers was one, the dressmakers was another one, the sportswear workers was the third one. We were all in separate buildings. Now there was three rents paid. They had three managers, and they had business agents for, each craft and all this. Of course, the sportswear business agent took care of everything except the cutting. And then also, if anything wrong in the cutting department, I had to go and notify the cutters business agency. But we took care of the pressers and the finishers and the operators and the special machine workers and everything. And then we even had a shipping clerk, and for a while, we had a shipping place in the Teamsters Union.
Mm-hmm.
But see, at that time, the Teamsters were still in the AFL-CIO.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And after they walked out from
then
we had to get all those people into our union. the shifting clerks.
So what I think is that the entire shop will be organized within, like, local. Mm-hmm. If the shop made sportswear, everyone who worked in the shop, regardless of what
that's
he
right.
did, would go in.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That because, you know, in the very early days, there was always a disagreement over the idea of craft unions versus industry unions.
Yeah, I know.
And not, but eventually it became more
yeah.
of an industry union.
So we have to, lots of times we didn't know it, but you know, if a person comes to me with a complaint, I don't know anything about person, but I have to listen to the complaint, and if I didn't know how to solve it, I have to go and see somebody at the union that knew about it, that had been a presser or something, because we have to know the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't know the answer if you're a garment worker. You know how to make a dress and you know the shortcuts and things. But if they ask you, well, now, for instance, in the shipping room, how do you pack? Well, I don't know anything about packing, so I have to go and ask somebody else.
Mm.
But this we did among ourselves.
Now, did you become the business agent right after 266 was born then?
I don't know when. It was in 41, the end of 41. Because, see, I was appointed first mm-hmm. a business agent
right.
by Dick Ferguson.
Yeah.
And then in 42, we had elections, and I was elected.
So it was very shortly after the start
yeah.
that you were appointed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, do you remember during the strike anything about the Moto Day?
Oh, yeah, that's the Moto Day shop. That's the only shop that Sue Adams became the... I helped organize that shop, too.
Now, that was a fairly big shop.
Yes, uh-huh. And it's still union. I mean, they have one in San Bernardino, which I worked on. They tried to get out of the union 7 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to make trips every morning from here to San Bernardino and come home every night for 2 months.
But now, was that a hard shop to organize?
It was originally, but then later on, I don't remember, something happened. I wasn't in on whatever. Anyway, something happened that all the women got together and signed up.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's where Sue Adams later on was the manager, because that was another local. She was a...
Oh, they didn't come into 262? No,
originally they did, but later there was a local... I forgot, I think it was local 384.
Now, so, weren't they sportswear workers?
Yeah, yeah, but still we had... it was called the Joint Council. See, instead of calling it the joint board, like they call it now, it was the joint council, and that took sportswear workers, cotton good workers, knit good workers, lingerie workers, so they were all in that, and we called it the joint council.
Mm-hmm.
That was different locals. So originally it started with 266.
Mm-hmm.
Like they made belts, and they made buttons, and they, like they have a big shop now called... babies pleading. They do everything, pleading, sewing, everything.